Thieves, beggars, a few murderers probably. That sort of thing. You've got some very nice friends, Sparhawk. Platum was carefully examining a necklace with a ruby pendant attached to it. When Sparhawk and Calton stopped in front of him, he raised his bleary eyes and looked them over, paying particular attention to Calton's finery.
"Who let these two in here?"
he roared. "We sort of let ourselves in, Platum," Sparhawk told him, thrusting his sword back under his belt and turning up his eye patch so that it no longer impaired his vision.
"Well, you can sort of let yourselves back out again."
"That wouldn't be convenient right now, I'm afraid," Sparhawk told him. The gross man in the orange doublet snapped his fingers, and the people lining the wall stood up.
"You're badly outnumbered, my friend."
Platum looked around suggestively at his cohorts. "That's been happening fairly often lately," Calton said with his hand on the hilt of his broadsword. Platum's eyes narrowed.
"Your clothes and that sword don't exactly match," he said.
"And I try so hard to coordinate my attire," Calton sighed.
"Just who are you two?" Platum asked suspiciously. "This one is dressed like a courtier, but I don't think he's really one of those walking butterflies from the palace."
"He sees right to the core of things, doesn't he?" Calton said to Sparhawk. He looked at Platum. "Actually, we're Pandians," he said.
"Church knights? I thought it might be something like that. Why the fancy clothes, then?"
"We're both fairly well known," Sparhawk told him. "We wanted to be able to move around without being recognized." Platum looked meaningfully at Calton's blood-stained doublet.
"It looks to me as if somebody saw through your disguises," he said. "Or maybe you just frequent the wrong taverns. Who stabbed you?"
"A church soldier," Calton shrugged. "He got in a lucky thrust. Do you mind if I sit down? I'm feeling a little shaky for some reason."
"Somebody bring him a stool," Platum shouted.
Then he looked back at the two of them.
"Why would church knights and church soldiers be fighting?" he asked.
"Palace politics," Sparhawk shrugged. "They get a little murky sometimes."
"That's God's own truth. What's your business here?"
"We need a place to stay for a while," Sparhawk told him. He looked around. "This cellar of yours ought to work out fairly well."
"Sorry, friend. I can sympathize with the man who's just had a run-in with the church soldiers, but I'm conducting a business here, and there's no room for outsiders."
Platum looked at Calton, who had just sunk down on a stool that a ragged beggar had brought him.
"Did you kill the man who stabbed you?"
"He did," Calton pointed at Sparhawk. "I killed a few others, but my friend here did most of the fighting." "Why don't we get down to business?" Sparhawk said. "I think you owe my family a debt, Platum."
"I don't have any dealings with nobles," Platum replied, "except to cut a few of their throats from time to time. So it's unlikely that I owe your family a thing."
"This debt has nothing to do with money. A long time ago, some church soldiers were hanging you. My father stopped them." Platum blinked.
"You're Sparhawk?"
he said in surprise.
"You don't look that much like your father."
"It's his nose," Calton said. "When you break a man's nose, you change his whole appearance. Why were the soldiers hanging you?"
"It was all a misunderstanding. I knifed a fellow. He wasn't wearing his uniform, so I didn't know he was an officer in the primate's guard."
He looked disgusted.
"And all he had in his purse were 2 silver coins and a handful of copper."
"Do you acknowledge the debt?" Sparhawk pressed. Platum pulled at his coarse black beard.
"I guess I do," he admitted.
"We'll stay here, then."
"That's all you want?"
"Not quite. We're looking for a man, a fellow named Krager. Your beggars are all over town, and I want them to look for him."
"Fair enough. Can you describe him?"
"I can do better than that. I can show him to you."
"That doesn't exactly make sense, friend."
"It will in a minute.
Have you got a basin of some kind and some clean water?
I think I can manage that. What have you got in mind?
He's going to make an image of Krager's face in the water, Calton said. It's an old trick. Platum looked impressed.
I've heard that you Pandians are all wizards, but I've never seen anything like that before.
Sparhawk's better at it than I am, Calton admitted. One of the beggars furnished a chipped basin filled with slightly cloudy water. Sparhawk set the basin on the floor and concentrated for a moment, muttering the steric words of the spell under his breath. Then he passed his hand slowly over the basin, and Krager's puffy-looking face appeared.
Now that is really something to see, Platum marveled.
It's not too difficult, Sparhawk said modestly. Have your people here look at it. I can't keep it there forever.
How long can you hold it?
10 minutes or so. It starts to break up after that.
Talon!
The fat man shouted.
Come here!
A grubby-looking boy of about 10 slouched across the room. His tunic was ragged and dirty, but he wore a long red satin waistcoat that had been fashioned by cutting the sleeves off a doublet. There were several knife holes in it.
What do you want?
He asked insolently.
Can you copy that?
Platum asked, pointing at the basin.
Of course I can, but why should I?
Because I'll box your ears if you don't.
Talon grinned at him.
You'd have to catch me first, fat man, and I can run faster than you can.
Sparhawk dug a finger into a pocket of his leather jerkin and took out a small, silver coin. Would this make it worth your while? He asked, holding up the coin. Talon's eyes brightened.
For that, I'll give you a masterpiece, he promised.
All we want is accuracy.
Whatever you say, my patron.
Talon bowed, mockingly.
I'll go and get my things.
Is he really any good? Calton asked Platum after the boy had scurried over to one of the cots lining the wall. Platum shrugged.
I'm not an art critic, he said. He spends all his time drawing pictures, though, when he isn't begging or stealing.
Isn't he a little young for your line of work?
Platum laughed.
He's got the nimblest fingers in Samira, he said. He could steal your eyes right out of their sockets, and you wouldn't even miss them until you went to look closely at something.
I'll keep that in mind, Calton said.
It could be too late, my friend. Weren't you wearing a ring when you came in?
Calton blinked, then raised his blood-stained left hand and stared at it. There was no ring on the hand. Chapter 6 Calton winced.
Easy, Sparhawk, he said. That really hurts.
It has to be clean before I can bandage it, Sparhawk replied, continuing to wipe the cut on his friend's side with a wine-soaked cloth.
But do you have to do it so hard?
Platum waddled around the smoky fire pit and stood over the cot where Calton lay.
Is he going to be all right?
He asked. Probably, Sparhawk replied. He's had the blood let out of him a few times before, and he usually recovers. He laid aside the cloth and picked up a long strip of linen. Sit up, he told his friend. Calton grunted and pushed himself into a sitting position. Sparhawk began to wind the strip about his waist.
Not so tight, Calton said. I have to be able to breathe.
Quit complaining.
Were those church soldiers after you for any particular reason? Platum asked. Or were they just amusing themselves?
They had reasons, Sparhawk told him as he knotted Calton's bandage. We've managed to be fairly offensive to Primate Annius lately.
Good for you. I don't know how you noblemen feel about him, but the common people all hate him.
We moderately despise him.
That's one thing we all have in common, then. Is there any chance that Queen Alana might recover?
We're working on that. Platum sighed.
I think she's our only hope, Sparhawk. Otherwise, Annius is going to run Elenia to suit himself, and that would really be too bad. Patriotism, Platum?
Calton asked.
Just because I'm a thief and a murderer doesn't mean that I'm disloyal. I respect the crown as much as any man in the kingdom. I even respected Aldrius, weak as he was.
Platum's eyes grew sly.
Did his sister ever really seduce him? He asked. There were all kinds of rumors.
Sparhawk shrugged. That's sort of hard to say.
She went absolutely wild after your father forced Aldrius to marry Queen Alana's mother, you know.
Platum sniggered.
She was totally convinced that she was going to marry her brother and get control of the throne.
Isn't that sort of illegal? Calton asked.
Annius said that he'd found a way around the law. Anyway, after Aldrius got married, Arissa ran away from the palace. They found her a few weeks later in that cheap brothel over by the river. Just about everybody in Samura had tried her before they dragged her out of the place. He squinted at them. What did they finally do with her anyway? Chop off her head?
No, Sparhawk told him. She's cloistered in the nunnery at Deimos. They're very strict there.
At least she's getting some rest. From what I hear, the Princess Arissa was a very busy young woman.
He straightened and pointed at a nearby cot.
You can use that one, he told Sparhawk. I've got every thief and beggar in Samura out looking for this Crager fellow of yours. If he sets foot in the streets, we'll know about it within an hour. In the meantime, you might as well get some sleep.
Sparhawk nodded and rose to his feet.
Are you all right? He asked Calton.
I'm fine.
Do you need anything?
How about some beer? Just to restore all the blood I lost, of course.
It was impossible to tell what time it was, since the cellar had no windows. Sparhawk felt a light touch and came awake immediately, catching the hand that had touched him. The grubby-looking boy, Talon, made a sour face.
Never try to pick a pocket when you're shivering, he said.
He mopped the rain out of his face.
It's really a miserable morning out there, he added.
Were you looking for anything in particular in my pockets?
No, not really. Just anything that might turn up.
Would you like to give me back my friend's ring?
Oh, I suppose so. I only took it to keep in practice anyway.
Talon reached inside the wet tunic and drew out Calton's ring.
I cleaned the blood off it for him, he said, admiring it.
He'll appreciate that.
Oh, by the way, I found that fellow you were looking for.
Crager? Where?
He's staying in a brothel in Lion Street.
A brothel?
Maybe he needs affection.
Sparhawk sat up. He touched his horsehair beard to make sure it was still in place.
Let's go talk to Platum.
Do you want me to wake your friend?
Let him sleep. I'm not going to take him out in the rain in his condition anyway.
Platum was snoring in his chair, but his eyes opened instantly when Talon touched his shoulder.
The boy found Crager, Sparhawk told him.
You're going after him, I suppose.
Sparhawk nodded.
Do you think the primate soldiers are still looking for you?
Probably.
And they know what you look like?
Yes.
You won't get very far then.
I'll have to chance it.
Platum,
Talon said.
What?
Do you remember that time when we had to get Weasel out of town in a hurry?
Platum grunted, scratching at his paunch and looking speculatively at Sparhawk.
How much are you attached to that beard? He asked.
Not too much. Why?
If you'd be willing to shave it off, I know a way you might be able to move around Samura without being recognized.
Sparhawk began pulling off chunks of the false beard.
Platum laughed. You really aren't attached to it, are you?
He looked at Talon.
Go and get what he'll need out of the bin.
Talon went to a large wooden box in the corner of the cellar and started rummaging around inside as Sparhawk finished removing the beard. When the boy came back, he was carrying a ragged-looking cloak
and a pair of shoes that were little more than rotting leather bags.
"How much of the rest of your face will come off?" Platum asked.
Sparhawk took the ragged cloak from Talon and poured some of Platum's wine on one corner. Then he vigorously scrubbed his face, removing the remnants of Zephrenia's glue and the purple scar.
"The nose?" Platum asked.
"No, that's real."
"How did it get broken?"
"It's a long story." Platum shrugged.
"Take off your boots and those leather breeches. You'll wear the cloak and those shoes."
Sparhawk pulled off his boots and peeled off the leather hose. Talon draped the cloak around him, then pulled one corner across the front and fastened it to the opposite shoulder so that it covered Sparhawk's body and reached about halfway to his knees. Platum squinted at him.
"Put on the shoes and rub some dirt on your legs. You look a bit too clean."
Talon went back to the bin and returned with a scuffed leather cap, a long, slender stick, and a length of dirty sackcloth.
"Put on the cap and tie the rag across your eyes," Platum instructed. Sparhawk did that. "Can you see well enough through the bandage?"
"I can make things out, but that's about all."
"I don't want you to see too well. You're supposed to be blind. Get him a begging bowl, Talon."
Platum turned back to Sparhawk.
"Practice walking around a bit. Swing the stick in front of you, but bump into things from time to time, and don't forget to stumble."
"It's an interesting idea, Platum, but I know exactly where I'm going. Won't that make people suspicious?"
"Talon will lead you. You're just a pair of ordinary beggars."
Sparhawk hitched up his belt and shifted his broadsword around.
"You're going to have to leave that here," Platum told him. "You can hide a dagger under the cloak, but a broadsword's a little too obvious."
"I suppose you're right." Sparhawk pulled out his sword and handed it to the fat man in the orange doublet.
"Don't lose it," he said.
Then he began to practice the blind man's groping walk, tapping the long, slender stick Talon had given him on the floor as he went.
"Not too bad," Platum said after several minutes. "You pick things up fast, Sparhawk. It ought to be good enough to get you by. Talon can teach you how to beg as you go along."
Talon came back from the large wooden storage box. His left leg looked grotesquely twisted, and he limped along with the aid of a crutch. He had removed his gaudy waistcoat, and he was now dressed in rags.
"Doesn't that hurt?" Sparhawk asked, pointing at the boy's leg with his stick.
"Not much. All you have to do is walk on the side of your foot and turn your knee in."
"It looks very convincing."
"Naturally. I've had a lot of practice."
"Are you both ready, then?" Platum asked.
"Probably as ready as we'll ever be," Sparhawk replied. "I don't think I'll be very good at begging, though."
"Talon can teach you the basics. It's not too hard. Good luck, Sparhawk."
"Thanks. I might need it." It was the middle of a gray, rainy morning when Sparhawk and his young guide emerged from the cellar and started back down the muddy alleyway. Seth was once again standing watch in a recessed doorway. He did not speak to them as they passed. When they reached the street, Talon took hold of the corner of Sparhawk's cloak and led him along by it. Sparhawk groped his way behind him, his stick tapping the cobblestones.
"There are several ways to beg," the boy said after they had gone a short distance. "Some prefer just to sit and hold out the begging bowl. That doesn't bring in too many coins, though, unless you do it outside a church on a day when the sermon's been about charity. Some people like to shove the bowl into the face of everybody who walks by. You get more coins that way, but sometimes it irritates people, and every so often you'll get punched in the face. You're supposed to be blind, so we'll have to work out something a little different."
"Do I have to say anything?"
Talon nodded. "You've got to get their attention. Charity is usually good enough. You don't have time for long speeches, and people don't like to talk with beggars anyway.
If somebody decides to give you something, he wants to get it over with as quickly as possible. Make your voice sound hopeless. Whining isn't all that good, but try to put a little catch in your voice, as if you were just about to cry.
Begging's quite an art, isn't it?
Talon shrugged.
It's just selling something, that's all. But you've got to do all the selling with just one or two words, so put your heart in it. Do you have any coppers with you?
Unless you've stolen them already. Why?
When we get to the brothel, you'll need to bait the bull. Drop in a couple of coppers to make it look as if you've already got something.
I don't quite follow what you've got in mind.
You want to wait for this Crager to come out, don't you?
If you go in after him, you're likely to run into the bruisers who keep order in the place.
He looked Sparhawk up and down.
You might be able to deal with them at that, but that sort of thing gets noisy, and the madam would probably send for the watch. It's usually better just to wait outside.
All right, I suppose we'll wait then.
We'll station ourselves outside the door and beg until he shows up.
The boy paused.
Are you going to kill him? He asked. And if you are, can I watch?
No, I just want to ask him a few questions.
Oh. Talon's voice sounded a little disappointed. It was raining harder now, and Sparhawk's cloak had begun to drip down the backs of his bare legs.
They reached Lion Street and turned left.
The brothel's just up ahead, Talon said, tugging Sparhawk along by the corner of his dripping cloak. Then he stopped suddenly.
What's the matter? Sparhawk asked him.
Competition, Talon replied. There's a one-legged man leaning against the wall beside the door.
Begging?
What else?
Now what?
It's no particular problem. I'll just tell him to move on.
Will he do it?
Talon nodded. He will when I tell him that we've rented the spot from Platum. Wait here. I'll be right back.
The boy crutched his way up the rainy street to the red-painted brothel door and spoke briefly with the one-legged beggar stationed there. The man glared at him for a moment, then his leg miraculously unfolded out from under his rough smock, and he stalked off, carrying his crutch and muttering to himself. Talon came back down the street and led Sparhawk to the door of the brothel.
Just lean against the wall and hold the bowl out when somebody comes by. Don't hold it right in front of them, though. You're not supposed to be able to see them, so sort of stick it off to one side.
A prosperous-looking merchant came by with his head down and his dark cloak wrapped tightly about him. Sparhawk thrust out his bowl.
Charity,
he said in a pleading tone of voice.
The merchant ignored him.
Not too bad, Talon said. Try to put that little catch I mentioned in your voice, though.
Is that why he didn't put anything in the bowl?
No, merchants never do.
Oh.
Several workmen, dressed in leather smocks, came along the street. They were talking loudly and were a bit unsteady on their feet.
Charity,
Sparhawk said to them. Talon sniffled, wiping his nose on his sleeve.
Please, good masters, he said in a choked voice, can you help my poor blind father and me?
Why not? One of the workmen said good-humoredly.
He fished around in one of his pockets, drew out a few coins, and looked at them. Then he selected one small copper and dropped it into Sparhawk's bowl. One of the others sniggered.
He's trying to get enough together to go in and visit the girls, he said.
That's his business, isn't it?
The generous one replied as they went on down the street.
First blood, Talon said. Put the copper in your pocket. We don't want the bowl to have too many coins in it.
In the next hour, Sparhawk and his youthful instructor picked up about a dozen more coins. It became challenging after the first few times, and Sparhawk felt a small surge of triumph each time he managed to wheedle a coin out of a passerby. Then, an ornate carriage drawn by a matched pair of black horses came up the street and stopped in front of the red door. A liveried young footman jumped down from the back, lowered a step from the side of the vehicle, and opened the door. A nobleman dressed all in green velvet stepped out. Sparhawk knew him.
I may be a while, love,
the nobleman said, fondly touching the footman's boyish face. Take the carriage up the street and watch for me.
He giggled girlishly.
Someone might recognize it, and I certainly wouldn't want people to think I was frequenting a place like this.
He rolled his eyes and then minced towards the red door.
Charity for the blind, Sparhawk begged, thrusting out his bowl.
Out of my way, knave, the nobleman said, fluttering one hand as if shooing away a bothersome fly.
He opened the door and went inside as the carriage moved off.
Peculiar, Sparhawk murmured.
Wasn't he, though?
Talon grinned.
Now, that's a sight I thought I'd never see. The Baron Harperin going into a brothel.
Noblemen get urges, too, don't they?
Harperin gets urges, all right, but I don't think the girls inside would satisfy them. He might find you interesting, though.
Talon flushed.
Never mind that, he said.
Sparhawk frowned. Why would Harperin go into the same brothel where Krager's staying? He mused.
Do they know each other?
I wouldn't think so. Harperin's a member of the Royal Council and a close friend of the primate Annius. Krager's a third-rate toad. If they're meeting in there, I'd give a great deal to hear what they're saying.
Go on in, then.
What?
It's a public place, and blind men need affection, too. Just don't start any fights.
Talon looked around cautiously.
Once you get inside, ask for Naween. She works for Platum on the side. Tell her that he sent you. She'll get you to some place where you can eavesdrop.
Does Platum control the whole city?
Only the underside of it. Annius runs the top half.
Are you going in with me?
Talon shook his head.
Shanda's got a twisted sense of morality. She doesn't allow children inside. Not male ones, anyway.
Shanda?
The madam of this place.
I probably should have guessed. Krager's mistress is named Shanda.
Thin woman?
Talon nodded.
With a very sour mouth?
That's her.
Does she know you?
We met once about 12 years ago.
The bandage hides most of your face, and the light inside isn't too good. You should be able to get by if you change your voice a bit. Go on in. I'll stay out here and keep watch. I know every policeman and spy in Samira by sight.
All right.
Have you got the price for a girl?
I can lend you some if you need it.
Shanda won't let you see any of her whores unless you pay her first.
I can manage it, unless you've picked my pocket again.
Would I do that, my lord?
Probably, yes. I might be in there for a while. Enjoy yourself. Naween's very frisky, or so I've been told.
Sparhawk ignored that. He opened the red-painted door and went inside. The hallway he entered was dim and filled with the cloyingly sweet scent of cheap perfume. Maintaining his pose as a blind man, Sparhawk swung his stick from side to side, tapping the walls.
Hello, he called in a squeaky voice. Is anybody here?
The door at the far end of the hall opened, and a thin woman in a yellow velvet dress emerged. She had limp, dirty blonde hair, a disapproving expression, and eyes as hard as agates.
What do you want? She demanded. You can't beg in here.
I'm not here to beg, Sparhawk replied. I'm here to buy, or at least rent.
Have you got money?
Yes.
Let's see it.
Sparhawk reached inside his ragged cloak and took several coins out of a pocket. He held them out on the palm of his hand. The thin woman's eyes narrowed shrewdly.
Don't even think about it, he told her.
You're not blind,
she accused him. You noticed.
What's your pleasure, then? She asked.
A friend told me to ask for Naween.
Ah, Naween. She's been very popular lately. I'll send for her, just as soon as you pay.
How much?
10 coppers, or a silver half-crown.
Sparhawk gave her a small, silver coin, and she went back through the door. She came back a moment later with a buxom brunette girl of about 20.
This is Naween,
Shanda said. I hope you enjoy yourselves.
She simpered briefly at Sparhawk, then the smile seemed to drain off her face. She turned and went back into the room at the end of the hall.
You're not really blind, are you?
Naween asked coquettishly.
She was wrapped in a sleazy-looking dressing gown of bright red, and her cheeks were dimpled.
No, Sparhawk admitted, not really.
Good. I've never done a blind man before, so I wouldn't know what to expect. Let's go upstairs, shall we?
She led him to a stairway that climbed into the upper parts of the house.
Anything in particular you'd like?
She asked, smiling back over her shoulder at him.
At the moment, I'd like to listen, he told her.
Listen? To what?
Platum sent me. Shanda's got a friend staying here, a fellow named Krager.
Mousy-looking man with bad eyes?
That's him. A nobleman dressed in green velvet just came in here, and I think that he and Krager might be talking. I'd like to hear what they're saying. Can you arrange it? He reached up and took the bandage off his eyes.
Then you don't really want to?
She left it hanging, and her generous lower lip took on a slight pout.
Not today, little sister, he told her. I've got other things on my mind.
She sighed.
I like your looks, friend, she said.
We could have had a very nice time.
Some other day, maybe. Can you take me someplace where I can hear what Krager and his friend are saying?
She sighed again.
I suppose so, she said. It's on up the stairs. We can use Feather's room. She's visiting her mother.
Her mother?
Whores have mothers too, you know. Feather's room is right next to the one where Shanda's friend is staying. If you put your ear to the wall, you should be able to hear what's going on.
Good. Let's go. I don't want to miss anything.
The room near the far end of the upper hallway was small, and its furnishings were sparse. A single candle burned on the table. Naween closed the door, then she removed the dressing gown and lay down on the bed.
Just for the sake of appearances, she whispered archly, in case someone looks in on us, or in case you change your mind later.
She gave him a suggestive little leer.
Which wall is it? He asked in a low voice.
That one, she pointed.
He crossed the room and put the side of his head to the wall's grimy surface.
To my Lord Martell, a familiar voice was saying. I need something that proves that you're really from Anius, and that what you tell me comes from him.
It was Krager. Sparhawk grinned exultantly and continued to listen.
Chapter 7
The primate said that you might be a little suspicious,
Harperin said in his effeminate voice.
There's a price on my head here in Simura, Baron, Krager told him. Under those circumstances, a certain amount of caution seems to be in order.
Would you recognize the primate's signature and his seal if you saw them?
I would, Krager replied.
Good. Here's a note from him that will identify me. Destroy it after you've read it.
I don't think so. Martell might want to see the proof with his own eyes.
Krager paused.
Why didn't Anius just write down his instructions?
Be sensible, Krager, Harperin said. A message can fall into unfriendly hands.
So can a messenger. Have you seen what the Pandians do to people who have information they want?
We would assume that you take steps to keep yourself from being questioned.
Krager laughed derisively.
Not a chance, Harperin, he said in a slightly slurred voice. My life isn't all that much, but it's all I've got.
You're a coward.
And you're whatever it is that you are. Let me see that note.
Sparhawk heard paper rustling.
All right. Krager's mush-sounding voice said. This is the primate seal. I'll agree.
Have you been drinking?
Naturally. What else is there to do in Simura, unless you have other entertainments, like some I could name?
I don't like you very much, Krager.
I'm not fond of you either, Harperin, but we can both live with that, can't we? Just give me the message and go away. That perfume you're wearing is beginning to turn my stomach."
There was a stiff silence, and then the Baron spoke very precisely, as if to a child or a simpleton. "This is what the primate Annius wants you to say to Martell. Tell him to gather up as many men as he'll need and to dress them all in black armor. They are to carry the banners of the Pandian Knights. Any seamstress can counterfeit them for you, and Martell knows what they look like. They are then to ride with great show to the castle of Count Radun, uncle of King Dragos of Arcium. Do you know the place?"
"It's on the road between Dara and Serenium, isn't it?"
"Precisely. Count Radun is a pious man, and he'll admit the church knights without question. Once Martell is inside the walls, his men are to kill the inhabitants. There shouldn't be much resistance, because Radun doesn't maintain a large garrison. He has a wife and a number of unmarried daughters. Annius wants them all repeatedly raped."
Krager laughed. "Addis would do that anyway."
"Good. But tell him not to be self-conscious about it. Radun has several churchmen in his castle. We want them to witness it all. After Addis and the others finish with the women, cut their throats, Radun is to be tortured and then beheaded. Take his head with you when you leave, but leave enough personal jewelry and clothing on the body so that it can be identified. Butcher everybody else in the castle except for the churchmen. After they've witnessed everything, let them go."
"Why?"
"To report the outrage to King Dragos of Larium."
"The idea, then, is that Dragos will declare war on the Pandians?"
"Not quite, no, although that's possible, too. As soon as the business is finished, dispatch a man on a fast horse to me here, in Samira, to tell me that it's been done."
Krager laughed again. "Only an idiot would carry that kind of message. He'd have a dozen knives in him as soon as he finished talking."
"You are suspicious, aren't you, Krager?"
"Better suspicious than dead. And the people Martell will hire are likely all to feel pretty much the same way. You'd better tell me a little more about this scheme, Harperin."
"You don't need to know any more."
"Martell will. He won't be a cat's paw for anybody."
Harperin muttered an oath. "All right, then. The Pandians have been interfering with the primate's activities. This atrocity will give him an excuse to confine them in their mother house at Deimos again. Then he will personally carry a report of the affair to Krellos, to lay before the church aristocracy and the archprelate himself. They will have no choice but to disband the Pandian order. The leaders, Vanyan, Sparhawk, and the others, will be imprisoned in the dungeons beneath the Basilica of Krellos. No man has ever come out of those dungeons alive."
"Martell will like that idea."
"Annius thought he might. The Styric woman, Sophrenia, will be burned as a witch, of course."
"We'll be well rid of her."
There was another pause.
"There's more, isn't there?" Krager added.
Harperin did not answer.
"Don't be coy, Harperin," Krager told him. "If I can see through all this, you can be sure that Martell will, too. Let's have the rest of it."
"All right." Harperin's voice was sullen. "The Pandians are likely to resist confinement, and they'll certainly try to protect their leaders. At that point, the army will move against them. That will give Annius and the Royal Council an excuse to declare a state of emergency and to suspend certain laws."
"Which laws are those?"
"The ones having to do with the succession to the throne. Elenia will technically be in a state of war. And Elana is obviously in no condition to deal with that. She'll abdicate in favor of her cousin, the Prince Regent Lycius."
"Arissa's bastard, the sniveler?"
Legitimacy can be bestowed by a decree of the council, and I'd really watch what I'd say about Lycius Krager. Disrespect for the king is high treason, and it can be made retroactive, you know. There was an apprehensive silence.
Wait a minute, Krager said then. I've heard that Edelan is unconscious and sealed in some kind of crystal.
That's no particular problem.
How can she sign the instrument of abdication?
Harperin laughed. There's a monk at the monastery near Lenda. He's been practicing the queen's signature for a month now. He's very good.
Clever. What happens to her after she abdicates?
As soon as Lycius is crowned king, we'll give her a splendid funeral.
But she's still alive, isn't she?
So, if need be, we'll entomb her throne and all.
There's only one problem, then, isn't there?
I don't see any problem.
That's because you're not looking, Harperin. The primate is going to have to move very fast. If the Pandians find out about this before he can get to the aristocracy in Krellos, they'll take steps to counter his accusations.
We're aware of that. That's why you have to send the message to me as soon as the Count and his people are dead.
The message would never reach you. Any man we send will realize that he'll be killed as soon as he delivers it, and he'll find an excuse to go to Lamerkind or Pelosia instead.
Krager paused.
Let me see that ring of yours, he said.
My ring? Why?
It's a signet, isn't it?
Yes, with the coat of arms of my family.
All noblemen have rings like that, don't they?
Of course.
Good. Tell Annius to pay close attention to the collection plate in the Cathedral of Samura here. One of these days a ring will show up among the pennies. The ring will bear the coat of arms of Count Radun's family. He'll understand the message, and the messenger can slip away unharmed.
I don't think Annius will like that.
He doesn't have to like it. All right, how much?
How much what?
Money. What is Annius willing to pay Martell for his assistance? He's getting the crown for Lycius and absolute control of Elenia for himself. What's it worth to him?
He told me to mention the sum of 10,000 gold crowns.
Krager laughed. I think Martell might want to negotiate that point just a bit.
Time is important here, Krager.
Then Annius probably won't be too stubborn about the price, will he? Why don't you go back to the palace and suggest to him that a bit more generosity might be in order? I could wind up spending the whole winter riding back and forth between Annius and Martell, carrying proposals and counter-proposals.
There's only so much money in the treasury, Krager.
Simplicity in itself, my dear Baron. Just increase taxes, or have Annius dip into church funds.
Where is Martell now?
I'm not at liberty to say.
Sparhawk swore under his breath and took his ear away from the wall.
Was it interesting?
Naween asked. She still lounged on the bed.
Very. She stretched voluptuously.
Are you sure that you won't change your mind? She asked, now that you've taken care of your business.
Sorry, little sister, Sparhawk declined. I've got a great deal left to do today. Besides, I've already paid Shanda your price. Why work if you don't have to?
Professional ethics, I suppose. Besides, I sort of like you, my big, broken-nosed friend.
I'm flattered. He reached into his pocket, took out a gold coin, and gave it to her. She stared at him in amazed gratitude. I'll slip out of the front door before Krager's friend gets ready to leave, he told her. He went to the door.
Come back sometime when your mind's not so occupied, she whispered.
I'll think about it, he promised. He tied the bandage over his eyes again, opened the door, and stepped quietly into the hall. Then he went on down into the dimly lit lower hall and back out to the street. Talon was leaning against the wall beside the door, trying to stay out of the rain.
"Did you have fun?"
he asked. I found out what I needed to know.
"That's not what I meant. Naween's supposed to be the best in Samura."
"I really wouldn't know about that. I was there on business."
"I'm disappointed in you, Sparhawk."
Talon grinned impudently.
"Probably not nearly so much as Naween was. They say that she's a girl who likes her work."
"You've got a nasty mind, Talon."
"I know. And you've got no idea how much I enjoy it."
His young face grew serious, and he looked around cautiously.
"Sparhawk," he said, "is somebody following you?"
"It's possible, I suppose."
"I'm not talking about a church soldier. There was a man at the far end of the street. At least, I think it was a man. He was wearing a monk's habit, and the hood covered his face, so I couldn't be sure."
"There are a lot of monks in Samura."
"Not like this one. It made me cold all over just to look at him."
Sparhawk looked at him sharply. "Have you ever had this kind of feeling before, Talon?"
"Once. Platum had sent me to the west gate to meet somebody. Some Styrix were coming into the city, and after they passed, I couldn't even keep my mind on what I was supposed to be doing. It was 2 days before I could shake off the feeling."
There was not really any point in telling the boy the truth about the matter. Many people were sensitives, and it seldom went any further.
"I wouldn't worry about it," Sparhawk advised. "We all get these peculiar feelings now and then."
"Maybe," Talon said dubiously.
"We're finished here," Sparhawk said. "Let's go back to Platum's place." The rainy streets of Samura were a bit more crowded now, filled with nobles wearing brightly colored cloaks and with workmen dressed in plain brown or gray. Sparhawk was obliged to grope his way along, swinging his blind man's stick in front of him to avoid suspicion. It was noon by the time he and Talon descended the steps into the cellar again.
"Why didn't you wake me up?"
Calton demanded crossly. He was sitting on the edge of his cot, holding a bowl of thick stew.
"You needed your rest."
Sparhawk untied the bandage from his eyes. "Besides, it's raining out there."
"Did you see Krager?"
"No, but I heard him, which is just as good."
Sparhawk went on around the fire pit to where Platum sat.
"Can you get me a wagon and a driver?" he asked.
"If you need one."
Platum lifted his silver tankard and drank noisily, spilling beer on the front of his spotted orange doublet.
"I do," Sparhawk said.
"Calton and I have to get back to the chapter house. The primate soldiers are probably still looking for us, so I thought that we could hide in the back of a wagon to stay out of sight."
"Wagons don't move very fast. Wouldn't a carriage with the curtains drawn be faster?"
"Do you have a carriage?"
"Several, actually. God's been good to me lately."
"I'm delighted to hear it."
Sparhawk turned.
"Talon," he called.
The boy came over to where he was standing.
"How much money did you steal from me this morning?"
Talon's face grew cautious.
"Not too much. Why?"
"Be more specific."
"7 coppers and 1 silver piece. You're a friend, so I put the gold coins back in your pocket."
"I'm touched."
"You want the money back, I suppose."
"Keep it, as payment for your services."
"You're generous, my lord."
"I'm not finished yet. I want you to keep an eye on Krager for me. I think I'm going to be out of town for a while, and I want to keep track of him. If he leaves Samura, go to the inn on Rose Street. Do you know it?"
"The one that's run by the Pandians."
"How did you find out about that?"
"Everybody knows about it."
Sparhawk let that pass. Knock on the gate 3 times, then pause. Then knock 2 more. A porter will open the gate. Be polite to him because he's a knight. Tell him that the man Sparhawk was interested in has left town. Try to give him the direction Krager took. Can you remember all that?
"Do you want me to recite it back to you?"
"That won't be necessary. The night porter at the inn will give you 1/2 crown for the information." Talon's eyes brightened. Sparhawk turned back to Platum.
Thank you, my friend, he said. Consider your debt to my father paid.
I've already forgotten it,
the fat man grinned.
Platum's very good at forgetting debts, Talon said. The ones he owes, anyway.
Someday your mouth is going to get you in serious trouble, boy.
Nothing that my feet can't carry me away from.
Go and tell Seth to hitch the gray team to the carriage with the blue wheels and to bring it to the alley door.
What's in it for me?
I'll postpone the thrashing I'm just about to give you.
That sounds fair.
The boy grinned and scampered away. That's a very clever young man, Sparhawk said.
He's the best, Platum agreed. It's my guess that he'll replace me when I retire.
He's the Crown Prince, then?
Platum laughed uproariously.
The Crown Prince of Thieves. It has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? You know, I like you, Sparhawk.
Still laughing, the fat man clapped the big knight on the shoulder.
If there's ever anything else I can do for you, let me know.
I will, Platum.
I'll even give you a special rate.
Thanks, Sparhawk said dryly. He picked up his sword from beside Platum's chair and went back to his cot to change back into his own clothes. How are you feeling? He asked Calton.
I'm fine.
Good. You'd better get ready to leave.
Where are we going?
Back to the chapter house. I found out something that Vanyan needs to know. The carriage was not new, but it was soundly constructed and well maintained. The windows were draped with heavy curtains, which effectively hid the passengers from prying eyes. The team which drew the carriage were a pair of matched grays, and they moved out at a brisk trot. Calton leaned back against the leather cushion.
Is it my imagination, or does thieving pay better than knighting?
We didn't go into the business for the money, Calton, Sparhawk reminded him.
That's painfully obvious, my friend.
Calton stretched out his legs and crossed his arms contentedly.
You know, he said, I could get to like this sort of thing.
Try not to, Sparhawk advised him. You have to admit that it's a great deal more comfortable than pounding your backside on a hard saddle.
Discomfort's good for the soul.
My soul's just fine, Sparhawk. It's my behind that's starting to wear out.
The carriage moved rapidly through the streets, and they soon passed through the east gate of the city and pulled up at the drawbridge of the chapter house. Sparhawk and Calton stepped out into the drizzly afternoon, and Seth immediately turned the carriage around and clattered back towards the city. Following the ritual which gained them entrance into the fortified house, Sparhawk and Calton went immediately to the preceptor's study in the south tower. Vanyan was seated at the large table in the center of the room, with a stack of documents in front of him, and Sophronia sat by the crackling fire with her ever-present teacup in her hand. She was looking into the dancing flames, her eyes a mystery. Vanyan looked up and saw the bloodstains on Calton's doublet.
What happened? He asked.
Our disguises didn't work, Calton shrugged. A group of church soldiers waylaid us in an alley. It's not serious.
Sophronia rose from her chair and came over to them.
Did you have it tended? She asked.
Sparhawk put a bandage on it.
Why don't you let me look at it? Sometimes Sparhawk's bandages are a little rudimentary. Sit down and open your doublet.
Calton grumbled a bit, but did as he was told. She untied the bandage and looked at the cut in his side with pursed lips.
Did you clean it at all? She asked Sparhawk.
I wiped it down with some wine.
She sighed.
Oh, Sparhawk.
She rose, went to the door, and sent one of the young knights outside for the things she would need.
Sparhawk picked up some information, Calton told the preceptor.
What kind of information? Vanyan asked.
I found Krager, Sparhawk told him, drawing up a chair. He's staying in a brothel near the west gate.
One of Sophronia's eyebrows shot up.
What were you doing in a brothel, Sparhawk?
It's a long story, he replied, flushing slightly. Someday I'll tell you all about it.
Anyway, he continued,
The Baron Harperin came to the brothel and...
Harperin?
Vanyan looked startled. In a brothel? He had less business there than you did. He was there to meet with Krager. I managed to get inside and into the room next to the one where they were meeting. He quickly sketched out the details of the involuted scheme of the primate Aeneas. Vanyan's eyes were narrow as Sparhawk finished his report.
Aeneas is even more ruthless than I'd imagined, he said. I never thought that he'd stoop to mass murder.
We're going to stop them, aren't we? Calton asked as Sophronia began to cleanse his wound.
Of course we are, Vanyan replied absently.
He stared up at the ceiling, his eyes lost in thought.
I think I see a way to turn this around.
He looked at Calton. Are you fit to ride? He asked. This is hardly more than a scratch, Calton assured him as Sophronia laid a compress over the cut.
Good. I want you to go to the mother house at Deimos. Take every man you can get your hands on and start out for the Count Radun's castle in Arcium. Stay off the main roads. We don't want Martell to know you're coming. Sparhawk, I want you to lead the knights from here in Samura. Join Calton down there in Arcium someplace.
Sparhawk shook his head. If we ride out in a body, Aeneas will know that we're up to something. If he gets suspicious, he could postpone the whole thing and then attack the Count's castle some other time when we aren't around.
Vanyan frowned. That's true, isn't it? Maybe you could sneak your men out of Samura a few at a time.
It would take too long that way,
Sophronia told him, winding a clean bandage around Calton's waist.
And sneaking attracts more attention than riding out openly. She pursed her lips and thought. Does the Order still own that cloister on the road to Cardos? She asked.
Vanya nodded. It's in total disrepair, though.
Wouldn't this be an excellent time to restore it? I don't quite follow you, Sophronia. We need to find some excuse for most of the Pandians here in Samira to ride out of town together. If you were to go to the palace and tell the council that you're going to take all your knights and go and repair that cloister, Aeneas would think you're playing right into his hands. Then you could take wagon loads of tools and building materials to make it look genuine and leave town with them. Once you're out of Samira, you can change direction with no one the wiser.
It sounds workable, Vanyan, Sparhawk said. Will you be coming with us?
No, Vanyan replied. I'm going to have to ride to Krellos and alert a few friendly members of the church aristocracy to what Aeneas has planned.
Sparhawk nodded. Then he remembered something.
I'm not entirely positive about this, he said, but I think there's someone here in Samira who's been watching me, and I don't think he's an Aline.
He smiled at Sophronia. I've been trained to recognize the subtle touch of a steric mind. Anyway, this watcher seems to be able to pick me out no matter what kind of disguise I wear. I'm almost certain that he's the one who set the church soldiers on Calton and me, and that means that he has ties to Aeneas.
What does he look like?
Sophronia asked him. I can't really say. He wears a hooded robe and keeps his face hidden. He can't report to Aeneas if he's dead, Calton shrugged. Lay an ambush for him somewhere on the road to Cardos.
Isn't that a little direct?
Sophronia asked disapprovingly, tying the bandage firmly in place. I'm a simple man, Sophronia. Complications confuse me.
I want to work out a few more details, Vanyan said. He looked at Sophronia. Calton and I will be riding together as far as Deimos. Do you want to return to the mother house?
No, she replied. I'll go with Sparhawk, just in case this Steric who's been watching him tries to follow us. I should be able to deal with that without resorting to murder.
All right then, Vanyan said, rising to his feet. Sparhawk, you and Calton go and see to the wagons and the building materials. I'll go to the palace and lie a little bit. As soon as I get back, we'll all leave.
And what would you like me to do, Vanyan?
Sophronia asked him. He smiled. Why don't you have another cup of tea, Sophronia? Thank you, Vanyan. I believe I will.
Chapter 8